Tonight, Supreme War, the death of Justice Scalia prompting a high-stakes showdown. The president vows to nominate a successor. Republicans refuse to even consider it. Major issues left hanging in the balance. Facing Trump's fury, the frontrunner again threatening to sue Ted Cruz and taking aim at George W. Bush over 9/11, Trump's risky attack as the former president hits the trail. Hospital bombing, a new horror in Syria. Medical facilities and schools are hit. Children are killed. A massive storm from Louisiana to Maine. Snow and ice in the north. A tornado outbreak hits the south. And heartburn alert. New concerns about prescription meds millions take to treat it. Linked to kidney disease, now linked to an increased risk of dementia. Nightly news begins right now.
From NBC News World Headquarters in New York, this is NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt.
Good evening. In an election year already fraught with improbable plot twists and drama, now this, the ideological balance of the U.S. Supreme Court suddenly in limbo. Tonight, there's late word on who President Obama might be considering to replace the late Justice Scalia as lines are drawn for an epic battle between Democrats and Senate Republicans who are determined to leave the choice up to the next president. Tonight, the current president is suggesting Republicans are full of bluster, but they, not Democrats, hold the power to control the process. Our justice correspondent Pete Williams begins our coverage.
The body of Antonin Scalia arrived overnight, the casket draped in an American flag, flown from Texas, where he died in his sleep at a private guest ranch.
The judge, when I found him Saturday morning, was in complete repose.
On the court, Scalia was one of the most influential conservatives in more than a generation. In dissent, his criticism could be stinging, even for Ruth Bader Ginsburg, his ideological opposite, but close friend and traveling companion. She said Sunday they were, quote, best buddies.
How is it that you're able to zing somebody, especially your dear friend Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and the next day still be pals and go to the opera?
Because the next day she'll be zinging me. I mean, it's equal opportunity zingers.
Among possible nominees to succeed him, Sri Srinivasan of Washington, D.C., and Jane Kelly of Iowa, confirmed as federal judges unanimously. Also, Washington Appeals Court judges Merrick Garland, considered a moderate, and Patricia Millette, experienced litigator and former Ginsburg clerk. For now, the Supreme Court is evenly split between conservatives and liberals without Antonin Scalia, so some of the big cases could end in 4-4 ties. On immigration, a tie would block President Obama from enforcing his plan to allow up to 5 million people here illegally to stay. And on abortion, a tie would allow tough new restrictions on access to abortion clinics in Texas to remain in force. Or, in case of a tie, the court could choose to withhold its decision and order the case to be re-argued when there's a ninth justice.
The justices have the ability to take a case in which there's a tie and just put it on a shelf and come back to it a year later, conceivably even 2 years later.
In modern times, the longest stretch the Supreme Court has gone without all nine justices is just over a year, and that was nearly 50 years ago. The justices are now in their midwinter break. They'll be back on the bench a week from today. Lester?
All right, Pete, and as we said, no matter who it is the president picks, the Republican leader in the Senate and many of the leading GOP candidates say no one should get a vote and the seat should remain empty until the next president nominates a successor. That could leave this battle raging for well over a year, as NBC's Andrea Mitchell reports.
The battle over the Supreme Court instantly redefining the presidential race. Republicans on the trail today.
I intend to make 2016 a referendum on the U.S. Supreme Court.
We're not moving forward on a nominee until after the election.
The Republicans should not allow it to happen.
The political wars exploded within hours of Antonin Scalia's death. Playing to the Republican base, Senate leader Mitch McConnell vowing to block any Obama nominee, saying the next president should fill the vacancy. President Obama quickly pushing back.
I plan to fulfill my constitutional responsibilities to nominate a successor in due time.
Democrats today arguing there is plenty of time to confirm a nominee.
I think we ought to talk about this, the Constitution of the United States.
And no excuse to leave the court gridlocked, potentially for another year.
It would be the height of irresponsibility for the Republican leadership not to have a vote on a nominee from the president.
So who will the president choose? The smart political bet, a moderate federal judge supported in the past by Republicans, much harder for them to reject. So far, most Republicans up for re-election in swing states seem to be following their leader. But depending on whom the president picks, could it backfire, even helping Democrats retake the Senate? Still, in the presidential race, it's a rallying cry for Republicans, especially Ted Cruz, a former Supreme Court clerk.
We're not going to give up the U.S. Supreme Court for a generation by allowing Barack Obama to make one more liberal appointee.
And Senator Leahy told NBC that President Obama already has his list. In fact, the president is likely to consult Republicans as well as Democrats to see if any potential nominee has a chance of getting a vote, despite the pressure from Republican leaders to block any action. Lester?
Andrew Mitchell, thank you. As the fight over the court plays out on the campaign trail, there are also new fights exploding within the Republican Party as Donald Trump launches multiple attacks, threatening to once again sue Ted Cruz and taking aim at George W. Bush over 9/11, right as the former president hits the campaign trail in support of his brother. We get the latest from NBC's Peter Alexander.
He's back, former President George W. Bush on the campaign trail, this time for Jeb in South Carolina.
Thank you for your hard work for Jeb. Thank you for what you're going to do, which is to vote for him on Saturday here in the great state of South Carolina.
43, aiming to make his younger brother, 45, rise to the White House, appearing together for the first time since Jeb announced.
Thanks to brother for giving us something to do today, something important. I'm proud of his candidacy, and I'm really proud to have been invited.
But on this President's Day, Donald Trump's trying to crash the party, attacking W today over 9/11.
The World Trade Center came down during his reign. So that was, you know, it's like he was the top.
And for invading Iraq.
You had him on the aircraft carrier saying all sorts of wonderful things, how the war was essentially over. Guess what? Not over.
And punctuating the fiery feud at Saturday's debate.
George Bush made a mistake. We can make mistakes, but that one was a beauty. We should have never been in Iraq. He
spent $22 million. I am sick and tired of him going after my family.
Will Trump's attacks against the Bushes backfire? George H.W. Bush and George W. Bush both carried South Carolina in their presidential primaries. Jeb is betting his brother, the former commander-in-chief, can still bring in voters. Here, the military community is a key constituent, generating more than 150,000 jobs and nearly $20 billion for the state's economy. Today, Trump is again threatening to sue Ted Cruz, calling him unstable and the biggest liar he's ever come across.
He doesn't even have the right to serve as president or even run as president. He was born in Canada. So I will bring that lawsuit if he doesn't apologize.
Cruz brushing off the threat, saying Trump has lost it.
This is the most rattle I've ever seen, Donald, this press conference today, where he just kind of stood and vented. I guess the only explanation one can have is that his poll numbers in South Carolina must be plummeting.
It is not the efforts.
And tonight's crowd by far the biggest that Jeb Bush has seen all campaign season. Earlier today, his brother, reflecting on his past presidential primaries, says he prefers focus on the wins than the losses. I'm a glass half full man, he said. In 5 days, the Bush family will find out if there's still reason for optimism. Lester?
All right, Peter, thank you. An unexpected battleground has opened up in the Democratic race between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. With just 5 days to go until the Nevada caucuses, Clinton is hitting the trail hard there. For months, many believed she'd win the state. But now, as our Kristen Welker reports, that's a big question mark.
After losing New Hampshire, Secretary Clinton is trying to come back with a win in Nevada.
I hope you will come out and caucus on Saturday.
Today, she again tried to paint Senator Sanders as a candidate solely focused on Wall Street.
I am not a single-issue candidate because this is not a single-issue country.
Sanders has dismissed that criticism, and today, before a raucous crowd of 9,000 in Michigan, said he'd met with the families impacted by the Flint water crisis.
I've just come from a meeting which was one of the more difficult meetings that I have ever attended.
The Clinton campaign answering, releasing a video touting an endorsement from a group of Flint ministers, praising her for highlighting the problem.
They need to fix Flint.
It's an issue that resonates with African Americans, including in states like Nevada, where in 2012, roughly 15% of voters were black and another 15% Hispanic. NBC News political analyst John Ralston says it's hard to get accurate polling, but he believes Clinton has a slim lead.
The Clinton campaign has to be worried about the whole millennial effect, right? All these young voters deciding to register on Saturday to go support Bernie Sanders.
Nevada was supposed to be a part of Clinton's Western firewall, but now it's in play. Voters in Reno underscoring the divide.
We got a big uprising for Sanders here.
Who do you plan to vote for this weekend?
Oh, Hillary Clinton.
And why?
I just want to see a woman handle the office.
Further highlighting the importance of Nevada, Secretary Clinton was initially planning to campaign in Florida. Instead, she sent her husband there so she could focus on courting voters here. Meanwhile, late tonight, her campaign officials announced they're opening an office in Flint, Michigan. Lester.
Kristen, thank you. Tonight, a massive storm is moving across a huge part of the country. It's being felt from the Gulf Coast all the way up to Maine. Snow and ice in the north and tornadoes ripping off roofs in the south. A huge mess, all from the same weather system. NBC's Kristen Dahlgren has details.
President's Day brought a fresh coat of snow to the nation's capital as a colossal storm system spread misery from the south through the Midwest and Northeast today. This twister was spotted in Alabama. In Louisiana this afternoon, another tornado touched down, damaging a Pizza Hut and injuring two.
My car was shaking. I seen it, like, coming at me. Ooh, it's scary.
In Mississippi, a high school nearly crushed when a twister toppled this tree. And Mother Nature wreaking havoc in Kentucky, where even snowplows couldn't stay on slick roads. Major highways did finally reopen after two massive pileups in Pennsylvania and Indiana this weekend.
In 32 years, this is probably one of the worst crashes that I've ever seen.
The East still hasn't thawed out after record low temperatures. On Sunday, Boston hit -9. Watertown, New York saw 37 below. And New York City was the coldest it's been in 100 years.
I've never known cold like that ever.
A warm-up is expected.
By tomorrow, we are looking at temperatures that are anywhere from 5 to almost 20 degrees above average. Lots of rain, airport delays. We go from frost to flooding.
An upcoming thaw that may bring everything but relief. Kristen Dahlgren, NBC News, New York.
We turn overseas now, where dozens of civilians, including children, have been killed in reported airstrikes in Syria. Multiple hospitals and a school were hit. NBC's Keir Simmons has gotten rare access inside Syria, and as he reports, this all comes the same week that a tentative ceasefire is supposed to take effect.
A desperate search for survivors. At least three hospitals and a school hit. Wards wrecked. An estimated 50 dead, the UN says. Babies had to be rescued. This video from opposition activists of a newborn in the arms of a firefighter. We don't know the baby's name or who the mother is.
I have seen many children and I have seen many, many women. They were injured and they were dead.
The hospitals were a deliberate target, Doctors Without Borders claims, accusing Russia or Syria.
To be today a doctor or a nurse in the areas controlled by the opposition, it's equal to be a criminal.
700 healthcare workers have been injured or killed in the Syrian conflict. 112 medical facilities were hit in 2015. The Syrian ambassador to Russia claims U.S. strikes destroyed one hospital today, an accusation the U.S.-led coalition denies. Just days ago, a partial ceasefire was announced by Secretary of State John Kerry and U.S. allies meeting in Germany.
This has been a period of intensified bombing, particularly in the north of Syria. We have condemned that in the strongest terms.
Today, Syrian President Bashar al-Assad said he believed the ceasefire would be difficult to implement. Just days from the deadline for a cessation in hostilities announced by Secretary Kerry last week, and there is little sign the fighting will end. Keir Simmons, NBC News, Damascus.
Thousands flocked to see Pope Francis today at a stadium in Mexico's poorest state. He met with families at the event, which followed an enormous open-air mass that he presided over earlier. And a moving moment from his visit yesterday to a children's hospital when a teenage patient sang Ave Maria for him, earning a kiss from the Pope and bringing those around him to tears. Still ahead here tonight, another new warning about common heartburn medications, why the millions of Americans who take them could be at risk of memory loss. Also, the dangerous mid-air incident that shook up one of the pilots aboard an international flight. We're back now with those new concerns about the prescription meds that so many people take to treat heartburn and acid reflux. 15 million Americans take them to block stomach acid, and as we reported last week, researchers suggest the medications may be linked to kidney disease and bone fractures. And now another concern being raised, that there may also be a link to dementia. NBC's Tom Costello has the information you should hear.
34-year-old Tara Hantman had acid reflux so bad it made her job as a speech therapist nearly impossible.
I actually got vocal fold ulcers and vocal fold nodules from it.
She found immediate relief in a very common medication to block the stomach acid, a so-called proton pump inhibitor. Among the most common brand names, Nexium, Prilosec, and Prevacid. But recent studies have linked the drugs to an increased risk of kidney damage and bone loss. And now, a large new study finds patients 75 and older who took the medication regularly had a significantly increased risk of dementia of 44%. Women taking the medication for at least 18 months were most at risk.
I mean, being 34 years old, even if dementia wouldn't hit me for another 40 or 50 years, it definitely concerns me that that could be part of my future.
The side effects may occur, say doctors, because we actually need stomach acid to digest our food, to ward off infection, and to absorb essential nutrients. Today, two of the drug makers told NBC News these medicines are generally safe and effective when used in accordance with the label and to avoid drug interactions. But many doctors are concerned that too many patients stay on the drugs too long.
If you have heartburn that is mild and it's possible to come off these drugs, then it's probably best to do so at this point.
Before today's study, Tara decided to stop taking all acid reflux medications. Instead, she's changed her diet. The result? No more acid reflux and no side effects from the meds. Tom Costello, NBC News, Washington.
When we come back, you won't believe who's already won a Grammy tonight. But here's a hint. It's not for his singing. A laser aimed into the cockpit of a flight from London to New York forced the flight to turn around. One of the pilots aboard the Virgin Atlantic flight yesterday was reportedly struck in the eye and felt sick afterwards. The plane with 252 passengers and 15 crew landed safely back at Heathrow. Investigators are working to find the source of the laser. Such incidents are troubling, certainly, but as it turns out, 2015 was one of the safest years on record for airlines. Four commercial planes did crash last year. That's one in every 3.1 million flights. But the 5 years previous averaged over 17 fatal crashes. Not factored in for 2015, the Germanwings or Metrojet crashes, because the International Air Transport Association says they were deliberate. And move over Taylor Swift, an early Grammy winner today, is stealing the spotlight on this President's Day. Jimmy Carter snagged his second Grammy in the spoken word album category for the recording of his book, A Full Life, Reflections at 90. The 91-year-old former president beat out other nominees that include Amy Poehler, Patti Smith, and Dick Cavett. When we come back, when life gives them snow, these brothers make snow art. The heartwarming story behind their cold weather creations when we come back. Finally tonight, we were talking a moment ago about another winter blast hitting millions of Americans. But the brothers we're about to meet don't see the snow as a nuisance. They see it as an inspiration to make something amazing for a good cause. As our Kevin Tibbles explains, their creations, like each snowflake, are one of a kind.
From the depths of the frigid vortex that is a Minnesota winter comes the giant snow octopus. And it's taken over the Bartz family's front yard.
A lot of kids driving by, and their parents will drive by, and they'll be in the back seat like, Mom, stop!
Maybe we should go to the eyebrows.
For 5 years, the Bartz brothers have been turning the fluffy white stuff many of us dread into wintry works of art. Always with a watery theme, because they love to fish.
When we're not ice fishing, we're out here working on the sculpture.
Don't you ever get cold?
Never.
These hardy boys have created everything from a pufferfish and walrus to a sea turtle and a shark. Although this year's octopus is the most ambitious yet, 500 hours to complete 150 tons of snow. and a tentacle that winds over Mom and Dad's front steps.
It's really, 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 really cool.
Folks come from miles around for a peek and a pic. This is a group of exchange students all the way from China.
It's marvelous.
It's wonderful.
How many legs does an octopus have?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
6, 7, 8.
6, 7, 8.
Many visitors leave donations, and so far they've raised almost $8,000 to help provide clean drinking water in Haiti.
You don't make life memories playing video games.
Nope.
You make them doing stuff like this.
Now that's something parents everywhere could wrap their arms around.
3, 2, 1.
Kevin Tibbles, NBC News, New Brighton, Minnesota.
So much fun. That's going to do it for us on a Monday night. I'm Lester Holt. For all of us at NBC News, thank you for watching, and good night.